As we come marching at the dawn of the day, all the darkened kitchens, the mill of gray, all touched by the radiance that the sun discloses.
Oh, hear the people singing bread and roses. Oh, hear the people singing bread and roses.
As we come marching, so many women dead, we cry through our city their ancient call for bread. Our stomachs are empty, but our hearts are hungry too.
Oh, hear the people singing bread and roses. Oh, hear the people singing bread and roses.
Marching, we march to four men, for their women's children, and we're mothers again. No more shall we labor from birth till life closes.
Oh, hear the people singing bread and roses.
Bring greater days, the rising of women ennobles the race. No more shall we labor while the rich man reposes.
Oh, hear the people singing bread and roses. Oh, hear the people singing bread and roses.
Sharing life's glories.
Oh, hear the people singing bread and roses. Oh, hear the people singing bread and roses.
Well, there we are, our theme song, and welcome to another wonderful hour, I hope, of Alternative to Soundbite Radio. You're listening to WXOJ 103.3. I hope you came to hear this conversation I'm going to have with three remarkable other women, Beth Adams and Cheryl Hogan and Ellen Graves, all of whom were in Washington for 11 plus days. Someone said it's 11 and a half of fasting and vigiling to shut down Guantanamo. So here on Alternative to Soundbite Radio, I invited these three wonderful women to come and share their stories about what brought them there and their personal involvements, their political involvements, and how that can in turn inspire you to keep on keeping on. So who would like to start here? Beth, you say, would like to. All right, Beth, let's hear from you.
I'm happy to start. It was I think the fifth year that I participated in this Witness Against Torture. It's, I think, only the third year that we've been doing fasts. And this was the first year that I did a full the fast in presence of the rest of the community gathered. And there were lots of people there. There were young people. I would say there were about 25 to 30 people every day. And it's a very meaningful part of my year. I look forward to going to D.C. to be in solidarity, to walk in solidarity, to act in solidarity with my Muslim brothers who haven't seen their families, many of them for like 9 years since Guantanamo opened. And it's an opportunity to take a stand and be with my sisters from Western Massachusetts to and other people throughout the country, really, that care about this situation, that people... We're alarmed, actually. We're very dismayed and alarmed that there exists a torture facility, in Guantanamo. They're seriously inhumane conditions in our own jails in the United States, but these people have been tortured mercilessly in Guantanamo and other prisons, sometimes before they even got there. So it's something that I plan to do until all these secret prisons are closed and Guantanamo is closed and that there has been just settlement of all the detainees that are there. And there are 173 there from all different countries, but they're all Muslim people. So I feel it's persecution of the Muslim faith.
I just want to remind people that Beth Adams, who now lives in Leverett, was really one of the spearheads, was the spearhead, actually, to get the let a Guantanamo prisoner come to Leverett. In Amherst, it really made big news that the Amherst town meeting voted to allow a detainee from Guantanamo come. But you brought it to Leverett, where the town meeting there passed it too. So I want folks to know that there are towns and cities, and there are you and others who are working to extend this call beyond simply a demonstration. So thanks for that.
Well, and it was a cooperative effort with lots of people, and we had a great educational forum with participation by three attorneys. Nancy Tulanian from the No More Guantanamos group was extremely helpful, and you were too in making that happen. So it's the least we can do to open our communities to detainees who actually have been cleared for release. And the others have not been charged. So, anyways, I'll let someone else share the rest of the story here. I'm sure you have wonderful things to say.
Well, I'll pick up the ball since I'm sitting next to Beth.
So that's Cheryl Hogan.
Beth, I agree with everything Beth said, which she expressed very well. I'll just go back and explain a little bit where this all got started, because that's an inspiring story in itself. Was in December of 2005. It wasn't that long ago. It was 2005. A group of 25 people went to Cuba pretty much unannounced. They just had, they had organized themselves very well and prepared themselves very well. They went to Cuba with the intention of walking across quite a bit of the island and ending up at the gates of Guantanamo with the purpose of getting in to both witness the conditions there and talk with the prisoners themselves. Of course, they were denied that entrance, but they did go, and they did walk across, I think, for 4 days. I think they walked across a good part of Cuba, and then they fasted for 4 days at the gates of Guantanamo. And when they came, after they had done that and they came back home, they decided to continue this effort. And the way they decided to do that was to call for a demonstration, not the very next January, but a year from then, in Washington on the day that Guantanamo opened, January 11th. So on January 11th, 2007, I and I think all of us were there to protest the existence of Guantanamo. At that point in 2007, there were still a lot of unknowns about what was going on there. Since then, it's become a little more transparent. Since then, apparently, torture hasn't occurred, but we do know or believe that three men were tortured to death in June of 06 at Guantanamo. So there's a lot to say no to, and Guantanamo symbolizes a lot of that. And for me, I just couldn't not go to that first demonstration in Washington. When I heard there was an opportunity to speak out against torture, I had to be there, because torture is just, I think it's the most destructive, it's as destructive as war to the human soul. And I have to do whatever I can to say no. And the group that organizes, I'll just say one more about that, the group that organizes these annual demonstrations is called Witness Against Torture, as Beth mentioned. And they are an amazing, wonderful, well-organized group of people. And I feel very privileged to be part of this effort. Because I think that as we're there together doing this protest and vigiling, we are forming what Martin Luther King called the beloved community. The way that we are together as we go through these 11 and a half days, fasting, sleeping on a church floor, moving all about the city, it's an example of how people can be together in the world that we're all hoping to create.
Thanks, Cheryl.
Hi, this is Ellen. I think Cheryl has put most of what I was going to say into a beautiful conversation. Mm-hmm. And I agree that, well, one of the things is that what we're doing is we keep bringing all of this into the public eye every year. And we're making sure that people do not forget that Guantanamo still exists. And the knowledge that even if we do not get as much publicity as we'd like to get, it makes me feel that people are becoming aware of our government still doing torture in other countries and holding people against their rights in Guantanamo. I know, and they're doing it in my name. But the community in itself, as we're at the church, and we take the names of people who are in Guantanamo, prisoners in Guantanamo, and the last year we were able to get those names into court. When we went to court, we were able to be able to put those names out so that they become a reality to the world, and they become real people, and they're real people to us. And I know the person is a real person to me and his history. And they come from many countries that are being held in Guantanamo. And as we're in Washington, we wear orange jumpsuits and black hoods, and we walk the streets in single file in silence. And it's a very, very compelling something that when people see us, they stop and they look. And they say, oh, you know, Guantanamo still exists.
That was one of the things that I think was most striking to me when one of our group, after one of our processions, because this year we focused on the Justice Department, so every day we would process to the Justice Department, and after one of our processions, one of our group was talking with someone who worked in the Justice Department, who asked why we were there. And when she explained why we were there, the employee of the Justice Department said, "Guantanamo, I thought that was closed." So it's, it's quite extraordinary for those of us who are very involved in what's happening in Guantanamo, both here with Nancy Tulanian and our local group, the No More Guantanamos, or with the Witness Against Torture national group. It was quite an astounding thing to hear, but I think it's part of the culture that in which we live, that people might say to us, "Well, I think the Iraq War is over," when in fact it's There's still bloodshed. There's still war going on, even though we've withdrawn our combat troops. And I think part of what I like to do, and I think the other people do too here at WXOJ, is to get these stories out that aren't a part of the mainstream media. So I'm so pleased to have the three of you here to really spend a little time in depth talking about what it is that that touches you and that motivates you to go to Washington to take this stand.
Well, I have a little piece here that I'd like to share about one of the detainees that touches my heart. I appreciate what Ellen shared about how the men have become real to us, and we're carrying not only the detainee or the Muslim brother with us, but family members also. And Cheryl mentioned the three that were suffocated to death in June 2006. And I had the, I think, honor and privilege of witnessing for him in the Capitol. Was it last year or the year before? I can't remember. It was last year. It seems so long ago. But the person's name is Yasser Talal al-Zarani, Presente. You would be 26 years old this year. We celebrate your life and light in your 21 short years. As a beloved, I need glasses to read this. Thank you. Beloved as a missionary of justice, carrying the torch of your deep Muslim faith to defend the treatment of your fellow prisoners, even if it meant death. You memorized the whole Quran, your holy book, and led prayers daily in your cell block, and sang songs all day long. Thank you for your life, a beacon of inspiration to all who knew you, and now walk with you and sing your spirit home. So we would sing this song that we sang through the week through the 11 days, and then last year I think you walked in the Heart Building and sang, "Courage, Muslim brothers, you do not walk alone. We will walk with you and sing your spirit home."
And it echoed throughout the building. It echoed throughout the streets of Washington. This reminder that that we were standing there with these Muslim brothers who cannot speak for themselves. Some have been tortured and killed. Others have been found guilty of nothing and have yet to be released. One of the questions that keeps going through my mind is how we've really allowed, I think, the mainstream media to refer to these men as detainees. And I wonder what are the obstacles to calling them what I think they really are, and that is prisoners of war. That they're prisoners held by the United States, even though they're not on U.S. soil. They have certainly been detained by us, and they are the living examples of injustice that's perpetrated, as you were saying, Ellen, by our country and therefore in our names. So that when we go to Washington and take this stand, we are saying not in my name.
Mm-hmm. Right. And if they were held as prisoners of war, by the United States. They would have some rights by our treaties. Held as the way that they are held, they have no rights whatsoever. And they're just, in the last few years, being able to see lawyers. But even if they do get a chance to see a lawyer, they do not have a lot of the time and privacy to tell that lawyer anything. Or whatever the lawyer does is has to be screened. He cannot come out with papers. He cannot bring in letters. It all has to be screened. So in this way of keeping them totally invisible, they do not have rights, and the United States does not really have to deal with the fact that they are tortured and in prison. And out of the number of people on Guantanamo, 173, this almost half of those have been already, they've been released, really, and they just cannot leave Guantanamo to anywhere. They're being held by our government, but they cannot go anywhere.
The fact that they haven't, many of these men haven't been charged even. They have not been charged, so they don't have a way of responding to what they're there for. Yeah. And those who have gotten lawyers, which is most of them, I think by now have been able to see a lawyer, although I'm sure there are a few that have been kept even from that privilege or right. But even those who have seen lawyers don't have the right to come to this country and be tried in a U.S. court. So what's left is these things called military commissions, which now we understand Obama is about to sign an executive order making a military commission the option left for trying the men that have as yet not been charged or tried. So there's a lot of injustice going on there. And when we went this past time in January to the Department of Justice, we were really finding that there wasn't any justice in this enormous building that takes up a whole city block in Washington. And nor would the people in that building come out and talk to us, not officially or unofficially, or not anyone in a responsibility, or even a clerk, not a soul would acknowledge our being there. So the men at Guantanamo are suffering from really outrageous injustice. And as we've said, it's being done, it's being supported by our tax dollars, and we are all kind of complicit to some extent in what's going on.
It's interesting that 2 years ago, some of us who were down taking part in the fast went to the confirmation hearing for Eric Holder, who was then the nominee to be the Attorney General. And as he sat in that hearing room and said, within a year, Guantanamo will be closed, there was such jubilation. We were there in our orange jumpsuits, and Code Pink was there in their pink. And orange and pink, actually, for those of you listening, are very nice colors together, better than you might imagine. So we were terribly buoyed, and I think, you know, that what we've learned over the past 2 years is that not only has Guantanamo not been closed, but some of the civilian hearings, the civil court hearings that were proposed as part of the closing of Guantanamo, the current administration has reneged on. And as Cheryl was saying, they've gone back to the consideration of, and as you said, perhaps the executive order that will mandate that the men who are still in Guantanamo will come before the military commissions rather than to have a full, legitimate legal hearing.
Mm-hmm. I have to say that, however, that because of the kind of injustice that has been reflected in this most recent case with Ahmed Galani, that I have very little trust that there would be any kind of a just trial for any of these men. The majority of the men over 700 of them have come and been returned to their families. And so the ones that are languishing now are the 173 left, including five of the Uyghurs, the Chinese Muslims, and Yemenis, and so forth. But this, in this particular case, I found it absolutely horrific that the judge, based on one count, gave him the maximum sentence of a life in prison. And after, this is after he was tortured for 7 years. He was in prison, and his confession was based, everything that he confessed to was done under torture. And yet this article that I'm looking at right now,
From where is the article?
Uh-huh. Pardon me? From the Associated Press, from the Hampshire Gazette. Oh dear, I can't.
Go ahead.
I don't have the date, but it was like last week. Says that, you know, it implies that he's guilty of these things, and that he did these things, and that he was this and such. But everything that we know about what the detainees confess to is said by them under torture.
But so. Beth, you said that they would be returned to their families, but many of them have been placed in other countries,
right.
even
That's
countries
right.
that are going to be torturing them.
That's right.
And then the Uyghurs couldn't go home to China. They That's ended up some in Bermuda. And where was the
Palau.
Other
place?
Albania.
Albania.
The island
Palau.
Of Palau.
Palau. Places that I don't think I heard about before. Wow. But they're going... They're not allowed to even see their families. As a
That's
matter
right.
of fact, one of
That's
the
right.
Uyghurs gave up his family and said, told his wife to go ahead with another marriage because he couldn't go home. So, you know, there's just a continual destruction of the family and of them and their souls. I mean, they're just treated as if they don't exist and they don't have any rights.
And most of them were in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Exactly.
They haven't been able to find anything that wasn't admitted under torture that any of them has done.
Awesome.
Let me just interrupt you with an announcement that you are listening to WXOJ 103.3 FM in Northampton, and you're listening to a conversation with Ellen Graves, Cheryl Hogan, and Beth Adams that I, Pocky Whelan, am having regarding our involvement with the efforts to close Guantanamo and in turn expose all the other places where our government is involved in detaining and in torturing people around the world, and in turn bringing it back home. As we, the more we talk about Guantanamo, the more people are reminding me, certainly, of what's happening in our own prison system. Mm-hmm. So I had to do that little announcement because we want to comply with the FCC regulations. Thanks for listening. We have some more time to continue this conversation. And Ellen, I cut you short, so please.
Well, I think one of those examples are, well, first, people were just traveling through. There's the migration to work is in here in this country. A lot of people from the north go to the south to work, or south to go to the north. And in the part of the Middle East, people were moving into Afghanistan to find work or wherever. And they were arrested on the street just because they were strange. They were different than the people there. And our government was paying money as a boundary,
bounty
yeah. to get money for each person, it quote unquote, as a terrorist. And they weren't terrorists. They were just people moving about.
Yeah, I learned this year that Afghanistan was easily accessible because they don't require a lot of restrictions to get into their country.
Good.
So a lot of Muslims went there so that they could practice their faith.
Well, yeah. You know, the Uyghurs went to Afghanistan because they were being persecuted in China, and Afghanistan was one of the few countries that they could think about getting to that didn't require a passport.
Right.
So that was a perfect place for them to go and to practice, as you said, to practice their faith. The northern migration that you were talking about, Ellen, is exactly what happened to the man whose name I've been holding for years, Hisham Sliti, who's a Tunisian. And as I hear about what's happening in Tunisia, I think, he could perhaps go home. But that northern migration that we're so aware of here in our hemisphere is also happening in Africa, where people are moving north to Europe, particularly for work. So that with both Hisham Sliti and other detainees I've heard about, they were trying to get free of their addictions that they were really prone to being in Europe, and people, their comrades, their friends, their fellow Muslims said, go to Afghanistan. It is the one place that you can be clean and sober and practice your faith. And so Hisham Sliti, thinking that he was going to get into Pakistan, found himself with three other northern Africans who the Afghan person was supposed to be taking over into Pakistan, and he sold all four of them for bounty. So it was so reminiscent of what we hear about coyotes bringing people from Latin America into this country. Mm. These universal stories.
Yeah, and this is one of our objectives what we hope people will understand as we talk about this is that the men in Guantanamo are people. They're so discarded and forgotten and called terrorists and quote the worst of the worst that I think everyone tends to forget that these are human beings, and that they have real families elsewhere, and they have histories and stories, and that most of them have done nothing. And the fact that there are 89 men there right now who have been cleared, as Beth said, cleared by our government, meaning they could go home, they could walk free if they had some place to go to. And yet we refuse to take them here.
Yes.
Right. Many of those are from Yemen. And
48 of them.
And because of the coal incident, our government will not release them to their own country.
Right.
So they're sitting there just waiting for a country that will take them. And the United States will not take anybody here. So most countries like Britain and France say, well, there must be something wrong here with them. If the United States won't take them, then why should we? And that's a big problem.
And the other ones that are there haven't been charged. So there's basically we're dealing with prisoners of war, which you addressed earlier. We're dealing with, and the conditions of torture, we don't really know what's being done in these prisons, do we?
Well, we don't know
that they're not being tortured. And this year I learned that solitary confinement itself could be an indefinite detention, and being away from your family could be considered a form of psychological torture, especially as we're looking at the case of Bradley Manning having, the psychologist for social responsibility have written a letter to Robert Gates. You can get that on the BradleyManning.org website. And basically they're saying that the solitary confinement constitutes cruel and abusive treatment and another way of saying torture.
Well, so, you know, it's interesting, this whole thing there are two things you're raising. One is what are the effects of solitary confinement? And I was struck years ago when our U.S. citizens who had been held in Iran and many of them, all four of them, during periods of solitary confinement. And these were men who were seemingly very well balanced, who talked about how they began to lose their minds. Mm-hmm. When you're kept in solitary confinement, when you're not able to see whether it's daytime or nighttime, whether you have no human contact. And I was thinking about that film years ago with the shipwrecked man who ended up with the volleyball Wilson, who became his friend. And that was one of the ways that certainly Hollywood let us see the need we have for connections, for another contact, so that the movie actor finds and creates another human head out of a volleyball. The men in Iran fortunately were released in time to regain that sanity that they had, but also had the memory of really losing touch with reality. And when you talk about Bradley Manning, I think that's one of the human cries, is that here is a man who hasn't been charged and for 7 months has been kept primarily in solitary confinement.
And the other piece that we've mentioned, but that I wanted to underline, was the piece of indefinite detention, because the men in Guantanamo now, not one of them knows that he will ever get out. Not one can say for sure that they will get out. Even of the 90 or 89 that have been cleared, they don't know for sure if they will ever get out. Hopefully they will, and they certainly I think they do maintain hope. But this just that not knowing, and those that have not yet even been tried and that will probably go before a military commission certainly don't know what their fate will be, whether they'll be found guilty and stuck away somewhere or not. But that indefinite detention, it's not something that our judicial system has ever allowed in this country. And now we're seemingly allowing it, we're seemingly condoning it, and making it okay. And this is why I think we all speak up and do whatever we can think of to do to keep this issue alive, because it's really a terrible injustice. It's inhuman, and we're doing it.
And we're not only just doing it in Guantanamo, but maybe other prisons too. And the fact that these people are taken, shackled, put blindfolds and headgear over their heads so they can't tell where they're going or what they're seeing. They can't see anything. Placed on planes, locked down on the planes, and then flown from some country, which they were just, that was their place, to all across the world and then to Guantanamo, brings that same, even isolation, even if they're in the cell and can see somebody else, it's still that same isolation because they don't know where they are. And they don't even hear or speak the same languages that the people are around them. So it's a horrible, horrible thing. And there are prisons, underground prisons, what we call black hole prisons, all over the world and in many, many places that we still haven't investigated.
Thank you, Ellen. I read a news report about Bagram before I went, and I was amazed at what they call it, the Bagram Theater Internment Center. Internment means you're like, that's what people do when they bury people. You know, it's like they're buried away. These people are lost to their families, and that's one of the reasons that we take a stand. And other people are welcome in this community that are listening today to join this. You can, you know, go to the website Witness Against Torture and see the different actions that we've taken and connect with the people through the website. And I'm not sure if you want to get in touch with one of us. I'm not sure.
Well, I think there are a couple of things. There's the local No More Guantanamos, which is currently putting together a program for March 30th. And all you wonderful listeners out there will have more details on this, but it's certainly the issue to be discussed that night by people with different viewpoints is the role that that detentions like Bagram, like Guantanamo, and the subsequent torture has in the creation of people who speak out against the United States. I dare not call them torturers or terrorists, but I want to just bring us back to another event that occurred when we were in Washington. We and some folks from other parts of the Commonwealth visited with the a couple of aides of Senator Scott Brown. And I think this is illustrative of the misinformation we get in this country, thanks to a lot of the various government spokespeople and the mainstream media, that we were talking about the importance of releasing these men who have been found guilty of nothing. And one of Mr. Senator Brown's aides said to us, well, you have read the article on the recidivism among people who have been released. And one of our compatriots, Lloyd Fillion, reminded the aide of her linguistic faux pas, if you will, and that is that nobody was released from Guantanamo who had been found guilty of anything. No one who had been released from Guantanamo had been found guilty of anything. If, when they left Guantanamo, they were asked, how were you treated there? And they said poorly or had any criticism of the treatment they received, that was perceived often as anti-American language, which could be taken to mean they were opposed to this country and should be suspect. So I'm sharing this because I think it's very important for all of us who are vulnerable to what we hear on these airwaves, even these perhaps, but not ours, that it's very important that we really discern what we're hearing, because it is real, it is very true that no one left Guantanamo who had been found guilty of any crime against the United States.
Yeah, and how can you be a recidivist if you weren't guilty to begin with?
That's right. So you become a recidivist. and I thought it was really wonderful when our compatriot noted that, because I think it's one of those things that happens with language, that we can hear something and believe it without really deconstructing it.
Mm. Yes, and we get peppered with so much information so much of the day with our attachments to the computer and all that it gives us, both good and bad, that it's hard sometimes to stop and really think about what you're reading and what you're hearing. And so what we're doing, and what I think many, many grassroots organizations are doing, is just trying to inform each other so that we are, you know, responsible citizens.
And making sure that the public hears and knows the truth about things, because the media mostly does not tell us the truth. It's very slanted on what we have to tell.
So those of you who are getting a whole new slant, perhaps, in listening to this today, you can always send contributions to our Valley Free Radio here in Florence, Massachusetts. But and we're getting close to winding down, and so I know that we had talked about this conversation, and I don't know if you had things that you wanted to share that you haven't had an opportunity to in our conversation yet, to give you that opportunity.
I had one thing. This is Cheryl. I just wanted to add about the fasting that we did, because you might think, well, what good does that do? Not eating for 11 and a half days. but it does have a way of making you really go deep into your to be discerning about your own actions and your own thoughts. And for me, it was a degree of sacrifice that helped me to give a little more, and to realize that to get the changes that we want, to get Guantanamo closed, and to have justice both in at that place, at other places like Bagram, and in our own prisons and in our own streets, we might have to give a little more. We might have to do something that isn't so comfortable always. So to me, it's a reminder that you can't just stay home and complain, or go to a talk once in a while. Sometimes you just have to do something a little more.
And it also, to me, it says that I have life pretty easy, and that after the 12 days, I can go back to my own life. So, but during that 12 days, I can feel what it must be like to sleep not that comfortably, to be cold a lot of the time, and to not to eat. And I'm a great comfort food person. So it just shows, it makes me feel much more connected to the men at Guantanamo.
I'd like to draw this picture for the listening audience of the last day that we walked around the Department of Justice. We walked, by the way, every day around the Department of Justice. And two of the days we took actions. On the 11th, and I think it was the 22nd, no, it was the 20th, that we took actions to try to put the issue really strongly before the Department of Justice, that we really wanted to speak with them and we really wanted a response. So so we walked around with our hoods on every day, maybe 35 of us. There were helpers that helped us walk because we were wearing hoods. The last day, if you can picture this, we did what we call a ghost walk, which was with the detainee that's in our heart, in our with us as we walk. We walk very slowly, very silently, and separate, not in a line anymore, and take our own pace. And it's mystically connects us with the energy of the spirit world, and also with the detainees that are being held in Guantanamo and other detention centers around the world, that we want very, very much to liberate them as we continue to work on liberating ourselves.
You know, one of the things that we were told by Matt DeLuisio, who's one of the organizers of Witness Against Torture, is that through their lawyers, the detainees at Guantanamo have heard about our witnesses. They've heard about our going to the courts. They've heard about our haranguing in the Supreme Court. They've heard about demonstrations in the in and outside the Capitol. And they've heard about our fasting. And that, it seems, as we've heard from the lawyers, has been one of the most powerful messages that the Guantanamo prisoners have heard. And it really stirred in them an awareness of their not being alone. That when they heard about our fasting, it really touched something in them and perhaps gave them hope that we in turn have to keep working to make sure those hopes aren't dashed.
But now, Cheryl, I remember one of them stated to his lawyer, they're doing all that and they're not even prisoners.
Right.
I mean,
yes.
They were very impressed.
There are prisoners in Guantanamo who are on a not a fast, but refusing to eat.
A hunger strike.
But they're being forced to be fed by being forced with tubes down their throats and things. So, you know, we are doing it in conjunction with them. And that in itself is a bound.
We did hear that they made signs. We did hear that they found out about our action this year, and I can't tell you, it was like a bell going off. It was very moving to hear that they had heard that we were doing this. It came through, I'm not sure how, but through an email to Matt DeLuisio.
So I think, you know, I can often feel, well, what does this matter? What does taking this action, what does this mean? And I can't help but believe that it makes a difference. That, you know, that overplayed quote of Dr. Martin Luther King, that the arc of the universe is long, but it bends toward justice. As I'm sitting with my three wonderful sisters, I'm so aware that we and you, we each have the responsibility to bend that arc, because it doesn't bend on its own. If we want justice, we have to take part in it. And one of the things I think we're doing, we certainly did at the Department of Justice, at the White House, and at the Congress, was to demand that they, those who have power, be held accountable. Mm. And so I'm very happy you were here today. Sharing these stories, and am always happy to find out that yes, we and others are joining us in these protests that we can actually do here, certainly with a lot less in the balance than our sisters and brothers in Egypt, for example. And so I think we have to, it's really incumbent on us to keep pushing so that we will have freedom ringing, and we may hear it all around the world.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Oh, you're very welcome. There are so many ways to be involved, and we're so fortunate in this valley of ours to be able to do that, that if you don't take advantage of it, we may lose it. Okay, so now we'll sign off. This is Bread and Roses. Please join us every Friday from 4 to 5. As a warm-up to coming up next, Amy Goodman and Democracy Now!